how long the world would keep watching. I don't know what the world wants to see in Gaza happen, so they can really move and act and stop what the hell inflicted upon every single one. Half of the population is children. They have nothing to do with this war. Most of the population have been going through or have had tragedies because of this genocide. Literally, every single one in Gaza has lost a loved one, has lost a family member. The houses are destroyed. Everything is in Gaza is destroyed. I don't know why the Israeli military wants to conduct another military campaign inside Gaza, because there's nothing to be destroyed at all. It's very simple. I can't really put it into words, but it's very simple that nothing can be salvaged if Israel
Rebecca
wants to
Abed, we
continue
want to
that.
thank you so much for being with us. A Palestinian journalist, 22 years old, speaking to us from Deir al-Balah in Gaza, has been diagnosed himself with malnutrition. And Shirouf Abdelkaddous, my deepest gratitude. Thank you for all of your work. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
As part of the All Thrills, No Frills special programming campaign, Comics Take co-host comedian Kimberly Nickel is producing a stand-up comedy show celebrating Women's History Month with a full cast of not dude comedians sharing their best PG-13 rated jokes. The show will be live for an audience on Friday, March 28th at 6:30 p.m. Set your intentions, save your seat, RSVP at kboo.fm/comedy. KBOO Studio will be filled with an audience enjoying puns, impressions, and cocktails. It'll be better with you there. Join us in the back of KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland on Friday, March 28th, 6:30 p.m. This event will be recorded and played on the radio waves on Monday, March 31st at 10 p.m. Donations to KBOO are encouraged. If you don't show up on the 28th, no one will hear your laughter on the 31st.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, genetic testing company 23andMe declares bankruptcy, putting millions of people's genetic data in limbo. A bill in the Oregon legislature would protect Oregonians from unfair insurance practices. And, in national news, Colorado residents catch toxic oil and gas emissions on camera. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, March 25th, 2025. I'm Josh Salem. The popular genetic testing company 23andMe has filed for bankruptcy, putting the genetic data of millions of people in uncertain hands. Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield filed a consumer alert, reminding people of their rights under the Oregon Consumer Privacy Act. Rayfield explained those rights in a statement, saying, quote, "Oregonians need to know that they still have full control over their own data. They can delete their genetic information and test samples on the website and pull the plug on any permission for 23andMe to share it with researchers," end quote. 23andMe says they're looking for a buyer for the company and will continue to operate normally during the bankruptcy process. This comes less than 2 years after a major data breach of nearly 7 million customer accounts. Rayfield advises Oregonians that they can download their data from the 23andMe website and permanently delete them. Other national experts recommend doing so before the company is sold. Some of the data and information sharing that folks could find concerning may already be happening. NPR reports that the company has given over anonymized genetic data to the pharmaceutical giant GSK for years to help it develop new drugs. More information can be found online on the Oregon's DOJ's privacy toolkit. Consumer rights advocates are rallying behind a new bill they say closes a critical gap in consumer protection, ensuring that insurance companies are held to the same standards as other businesses in Oregon. Isabella Charlet reports.
New legislation would bring the insurance industry under Oregon's Unlawful Trade Practices Act. Supporters say the change would protect consumers from deceptive practices. Attorney Tyler Staggs represented insurers for nearly 20 years. He says his law firm now advocates for consumers because of the insurance industry's growing unfairness. He cites cases such as a client left homeless when an insurer denied living expenses after a house fire. In another case, he says, a client was denied a claim after a brain injury from a car accident.
Rather than paying the benefits that the insured paid for, the insurance company lowballs them and delays to see if they can force them to take a settlement.
Oregon's insurance industry is the only major industry in the state not subject to the state's Unlawful Trade Practices Act. The bill is scheduled for a work session in the Senate today. Stagg says insurance companies argue the change will lead to more lawsuits and higher rates for consumers. He says if companies are treating people fairly, rates will not have to increase.
To say, well, we shouldn't have this enforcement mechanism because it's going to raise your rates, really seems like disingenuous, and it seems like blackmail.
Staggs explains that under the UTPA, if the court finds a lawsuit to be unjustified, the insured would be responsible for covering the insurance company's legal fees. This protects insurers against baseless claims. Mike Lieb is with Precision Body and Paint, an auto body repair shop based in Beaverton. He says insurers exploit consumers' lack of time and money to fight claims. He says negotiating with insurers has become combative as they routinely delay and deny legally required repair reimbursements.
They are declining required repair procedures by manufacturers. That can result in an unsafe repair, which can result in a death.
Both Lieb and Stagg say insurance companies' quality of service has been worse since the pandemic when they closed local offices and started depending more on AI. They say this legislation would make insurance companies accountable to fairly evaluate claims. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Two bills in California state legislature seek to recover some of the cost of climate-linked disasters, including the Los Angeles fires, from oil and gas companies. Suzanne Potter tells us more.
Insurance rates are rising fast in California because of fires and floods linked to climate change, and now two new bills in Sacramento seek to make oil and gas companies pay. The Affordable Insurance and Climate Recovery Act would create legal pathways for homeowners, insurance companies, and the state insurance plan to sue and recover losses from oil and gas companies. Melissa Romero with California Environmental Voters says the companies misled lawmakers and the public.
The one group that hasn't paid their fair share in all of this is oil and gas companies. They knew since the 70s, the 80s, that their products were creating runaway climate change. They hid the science, they did nothing about it, and they continued to push an agenda that stymied a lot of efforts to switch over to clean energy.
The Western States Petroleum Association called the bills a way for politicians to capitalize on tragedy. The California Independent Petroleum Association has said the real culprits for the fires are arsonists, environmental lawsuits that prevent forest management, and cuts to firefighting budgets. Romero also supports the Polluters Pay Superfund bill, which would charge fossil fuel companies according to their role in climate change and invest in climate-resilient communities.
It requires the California Environmental Protection Agency to do a report about the actual cost, both looking backwards and forwards, that climate change has caused California in terms of our infrastructure and disaster response.
Proponents of the bills complained that insurance ratepayers and taxpayers are hard hit by climate disasters. The state's FAIR plan, the insurer of last resort, has assessed insurers and ratepayers $1 billion for LA wildfire claims so far. Meanwhile, State Farm is likely to get regulators' permission to raise homeowners' insurance rates by 22% after a hearing on April 8th. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A Marion County judge has blocked a controversial order by Governor Tina Kotek, which required use of union labor in a variety of state construction projects. In a hearing earlier this week, Circuit Court Judge Thomas M. Hart issued an injunction barring Kotek's administration from moving forward with a policy that critics say would benefit her allies in labor at taxpayers' expense. The possibility remains the Oregon Supreme Court could overturn the order. The governor issued that order late last year, demanding state agencies use tools known as project labor agreements in at least some state construction projects, where on-site labor costs make up at least 15%. PLAs are contracts between a project owner, like the state, and one or more of the labor unions that will be providing workers. They typically lay out the working conditions for the entire project, including provisions on pay and benefits. The Associated General Contractors Oregon Columbia chapter challenged Kotek's order in court. Its CEO, Mike Salzgiver, said, quote, "The judge's ruling reinforces what our local contractors have been saying since the order was issued last December. The governor lacks the authority to unilaterally alter Oregon's system of competitive bidding and open and fair competition," end quote. PLAs often guarantee unions will not strike and that employers will not lock out employees. Some deals require a target number of apprentices or contracts with minority-owned businesses. Kotek has argued the latter condition would ensure the state is supporting disadvantaged communities. Supporters say, though, that PLAs offer certainty to projects and that the use of union labor ensures a quality product. Finally, they say PLAs can help projects be completed earlier by minimizing labor strife. Opponents argue PLAs reduce competition by discouraging bids from construction firms that don't typically use union labor. Some studies have found PLAs lead to higher costs. Associated General Contractors and some of its member firms sued in February. They argued that Kotek's order is an unconstitutional power grab and that the governor either needed to win legislative approval or go through a vigorous rulemaking process before making such a sweeping policy change. The state rebutted, saying Kotek's order is within her authority as governor and that the contractors didn't have standing to sue. The two parties argued their cases before Judge Hart on Monday morning. The judge granted the construction firm's request for an injunction. Laurie Kendall, president of the Associated Builders and Contractors Pacific Northwest chapter, said, quote, "Our members appreciate Judge Hart's ruling and his common sense review of the facts. The ruling protects the rights of all contractors, union and non-union, to compete," end quote. The injunction won't have any immediate impact on state projects. The order allowed agencies to claim an exemption through March 31st. The Oregon Department of Justice, which is representing Kotek, declined comment. Donald Trump credits tariffs for a Hyundai steel investment in Louisiana, but residents say the governor is betraying them over the health concerns there. And other states double down on climate change as the Trump administration rolls back environmental regulations. With those stories and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This investment is a clear demonstration that tariffs very strongly work, and I hope other things also, but the tariffs are bringing them in at levels that have not been witnessed.
President Donald Trump says his tariffs on global steel imports are why Hyundai Steel is investing $5 billion in a new plant in Louisiana. The subsidiary of the South Korean industrial giant plans to build an electric arc furnace capable of producing almost 3 million tons of steel per year and create 1,300 jobs. The process typically has a quarter of the carbon footprint of traditional steel manufacturing, but community members say Governor Jeff Landry has betrayed them by ignoring their worries about pollution from the plant. Ascension Parish is in Cancer Alley, a stretch of the Mississippi River where cancer rates are many times the national average. Ann Rolfels with the Louisiana Bucket Brigade says that ties into oil refineries and other fossil fuel plants packed into historically black neighborhoods.
If this proposed Hyundai steel plant were so wonderful, there's no doubt that Hyundai would build it in its own country of South Korea. But instead, Hyundai is exporting pollution to Louisiana. There's just no one standing up for us.
The plant is expected to benefit from a state subsidy, a 10-year exemption on local property taxes for new or expanded industrial sites. Some residents feel the long-term economic benefits will outweigh costs, but Ashley Gagnard with community group Rural Roots says residents have questions no one is answering.
When will the community have a choice on how will their health be affected? How will this steel plant dispose of the excess metals? How will the metal affect the air? Will cobalt be a part of the problem? We are asking for answers in West Ascension on the new steel plant.
New EPA leadership is looking to roll back climate and clean air rules. Administrator Lee Zeldin says they should rescind the 2009 finding that greenhouse gases endanger human health and the environment, but several states are moving in the opposite direction. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro is suing the administration and is promoting a six-part proposal to accelerate clean energy projects. Molly Parzin with Conservation Voters of Pennsylvania says they hope Shapiro's lightning plan will not only boost cheaper renewables, but also help rural communities to cut their energy costs.
We want to give families who are struggling with high electricity bills the option to opt into clean energy and access cheaper clean energy through things like community solar, community geothermal, and other types of projects that can generate for multiple households.
The plan would set the goal of having Pennsylvania generate more than a third of its energy from clean sources by 2035, but some critics say Shapiro's plan would actually sustain or even increase the use of fossil fuels. The Trump administration is on the defensive after national security officials accidentally included Jeffrey Goldberg, the editor-in-chief for The Atlantic, in a text message about upcoming plans to attack the Houthis in Yemen. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth is denouncing Goldberg and denying it even happened. Hegseth has been cracking down on leaks of sensitive information, including using polygraphs on defense personnel to understand how reporters got certain information. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer is calling for a probe into how a security breach of this magnitude could have occurred. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on Trans Day of Visibility, coming up March 31st. At 6, it's This Way Out. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with a low of 52. Tomorrow's weather will be warm with thunderstorms in the afternoon and a daytime high of 78 degrees. Today in history, in 1965, civil rights activists led by Martin Luther King Jr. successfully complete their 4-day 50-mile march from Selma to the state capitol in Montgomery, Alabama. The quote of the day is from American agricultural scientist and Nobel Peace Prize winner Norman Ernest Borlaug, who said, "You can't build a peaceful world on empty stomachs and human misery." A senator issues a letter about the public safety crisis on tribal lands, and a report on the missing and murdered Indigenous people crisis is removed from federal websites. With those stories and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. South Dakota Republican Senator Mike Rounds has requested the issue of violent crime be addressed on the nation's reservations. In a letter to Attorney General Pam Bondi and Secretary of Interior Doug Burgum, the senator has requested the creation of the Violent Crime Reduction Commission, specifically for tribal lands. This comes after several tribes addressed concerns about violent crime conditions. Rounds describes the situation on Great Plains Reservation communities as, quote, a public safety crisis. Historically, reservations have seen higher than average rates of violent crime than the larger U.S., while contending with understaffing of law enforcement services. A report that highlighted the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous people was removed from several federal websites last month, to the disappointment of some Alaska Native advocates. The final report by the Not Invisible Act Commission was a joint effort by the U.S. Justice and Interior Departments completed in 2023. It focused on the disproportionate rates of assault and murder in Indigenous communities across the country, as well as unique issues faced by Alaska Native people. President Trump signed the law that mandated the report during his first term. In February, the report's authors and advocates noticed that the link had been deleted from several federal websites, including the Department of Justice. The reason for the removal was not immediately clear. Michelle Demmer is a longtime tribal judge and University of Alaska Fairbanks professor who is one of the report's commissioners. Demmer, who's Tlingit and Haida, says she was deeply disappointed with its removal.
It's like a slap in the face. It just really saddens me then to have the report removed like it doesn't even exist.
For 18 months, the commission heard from people across the country, including in Anchorage, Bethel, and Emonic. Those stories were included in the final report.
People traveled far and wide to come give testimony about situations that involved their loved ones. They trusted us with their stories, even though it was painful for them to have to retell these stories, but they felt like this might be the one opportunity that someone hears them and takes action.
Charlene Akpik-Apak is the executive director of the nonprofit Data for Indigenous Justice. Apak, who's Anupiak, attended the commission hearing that was held in Anchorage. She found it unsettling that the report was deleted from websites, but she does not want people to be discouraged.
We still know what was said. We still know our truth. We still know our stories, and they can't take that away from us. Our knowledge and our truth is something that cannot be erased.
APOC says she appreciates the report's specific recommendations for Alaska, which spoke to historic violence against Alaska Native women, the landscape and structure of rural communities, and challenges with legal and public safety systems. She adds that despite the report's removal, organizations like Data for Indigenous Justice will continue to document and track cases of violence against Indigenous people in Alaska. The Center for Native American Youth has announced its cohort for this year's Remembering Our Sisters Fellowship. The virtual storytelling and digital arts program supports Native youth who are raising awareness about missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit. During the six-month program, fellows will create digital art and storytelling projects to bring attention to the issue. Six fellows from tribes across the country, including from Oklahoma, Arizona, and California, were chosen for the program. Fellows will receive technical assistance, mentorship, and opportunities to share their projects. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Colorado is the nation's fourth largest oil and gas producer, and many of those oil wells are next to neighborhoods where people live. Colorado residents are gathering evidence to hold oil and gas operators accountable for toxic emissions that are invisible to the naked eye, using an optical gas imaging camera. Eric Galatas reports.
As oil and gas well sites pop up next to more Colorado neighborhoods, residents are gathering evidence to hold operators accountable for toxic emissions, which are invisible to the naked eye. Bobby Mooney is a staff attorney with 350 Colorado, a nonprofit that organizes tours and trainings. She says using optical gas imaging technology, everyday Coloradans can now see the single largest source of air pollution along the Front Range with their own eyes.
We've been in violation of federal health-based standard for over a decade, and despite a lot of talk and efforts to change rules and regulations, unfortunately, we've not seen an improvement in air quality here.
Colorado is the nation's fourth largest oil and gas producer, and there are currently more than 46,000 active wells. That's up 25% since 2009, largely due to expanded fracking operations. The Trump administration would like to see that number go up and has promised to roll back regulations in order to achieve its goal of energy dominance. The American Lung Association's latest State of the Air report card gave Colorado's Front Range an F for poor air quality due to ground-level ozone and particle pollution. Mooney notes toxic emissions from oil and gas sites such as benzene pose serious threats to human health at every stage of life.
And regulations are really the only line of defense that Coloradans have to protect our health and safety from the impacts of oil and gas extraction. Everything from air pollution to water consumption to habitat destruction.
350 Colorado has partnered with Earthworks to get the optical gas imaging camera into the hands of more communities. Mooney says tour participants also get tips on how to let lawmakers know what they saw and how to push leaders to protect their neighbors.
We also encourage participants to write a public comment to their local county or a city or to the state government agencies like the Colorado Energy and Carbon Management Commission or the Department of Public Health and Environment that regulates air quality.
This is Eric Galatas for the Colorado News Connection.
A Colorado couple invested in wildfire protection for their home. It paid off. Months before a wildfire, they had taken steps to prevent fires from reaching their house. Dr. Anthony Lizowicz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowicz, and this is Climate Connections. When the Stone Canyon fire raged near Lyons, Colorado last year, Nick Schneider and his wife saw most of their property go up in flames. But the couple's home itself was spared, thanks to efforts they had taken to prevent fires from reaching the house.
There was a pretty clear line, and everything outside that line was totally burned. And then there was a zone where, by design, the fire ran out of fuel.
Just months before the fire, the couple had contacted a group called Wildfire Partners, which helps Colorado homeowners prepare for wildfires. Schneider says the organization sent an expert to inspect their property and worked with them to identify steps they could take to help protect their home. Their plan included trimming tall grass and bushes that would fuel a fire, installing ground cover like stone and gravel, and moving flammable items like firewood away from the house. Schneider says those efforts paid off.
I'm 100% sure that if we had not made those steps with Wildfire Partners, that our house would have burned down.
As the climate warms, the risk of wildfires is growing. But as Schneider's experience shows, people can take action to help protect their homes. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Vladimir Putin is in the driver's seat in the U.S.-Russia talks on Ukraine, and his demands go far beyond wanting more Ukraine territory. As one observer notes, Donald Trump has little leverage and a reverse Nixon strategy to separate Russia from China that is likely to fail. Now we go to global citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. One thing seems clear to me about the U.S.-Russia peace talks. Vladimir Putin is in an enviable position to get what he wants. Maybe not all of what he wants, but most of it. In the two-hour conversation between Putin and President Trump, Putin agreed only to a pause on attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure, a promise he violated 1 hour later. He would not agree to a 30-day ceasefire, which to my mind means the Trump plan has failed. As I believe Putin sees it, the Ukraine army is on the run and Donald Trump wants out. Trump has already made concessions even before his telephone conversation with Putin, agreeing to keep Zelensky on the outside looking in, agreeing that Ukraine cannot become a member of NATO, and agreeing that Ukraine will have to make territorial concessions. Trump's team in talks with the Russians is amateurish. People like Steve Witkoff can't praise Putin enough, believing his every word and assuring one and all that the Russian leader wants peace. U.S. intelligence is reported to have concluded that Putin aims to have a dominant position vis-à-vis Ukraine once an agreement is reached. He reportedly also wants international recognition of Russian-occupied territory and no NATO troops deployed to Ukraine for peacekeeping. Most unacceptable is his demand during his conversation with Trump, termination of all aid to Ukraine, both military and intelligence. Putin, on the other hand, has not been asked to give up anything. To the contrary, Putin's agenda is very large indeed, as Laurie Bristow reports in a recent issue of Foreign Policy magazine. When he says that any agreement must address the underlying causes of the war, he means the very existence of Ukraine, which Putin regards as an anti-Russian project of the West. He also means that Russia's security needs to go beyond keeping Ukraine out of NATO. It means that Russia has a veto over other countries' security arrangements, and Putin wants to cut the United States down to size by decoupling it from Europe. Does Trump have any leverage over all these Putin demands? Sanctions? I've dealt with that option in a previous commentary. Sanctions on Russia seem highly unlikely to be used. First, because Trump values Putin's friendship more than he values Europe's. And second, because sanctions on Russia would have little impact on its economy. Trump's threat to use sanctions on Russia to get a deal are, in a word, empty. Beyond the U.S.-Russia negotiations lie two other major issues that are likely to doom them, even if Trump and Putin reach an agreement: Ukraine's reaction to a deal, and problems implementing a ceasefire. President Zelensky has approved the limited ceasefire, but he wants Ukraine to approve every other agreement the U.S. and Russia make. He certainly is not going to endorse Russia's occupation of Ukrainian land, nor will he agree to limits on what the Europeans might provide by way of security assistance. And what about Ukraine's 20,000 stolen children and Putin's war crimes? Zelensky will have to steel himself for the predicted Trump pressure tactics to force his acquiescence. He is very likely to say that no one has the right to sacrifice another country's sovereignty. Should a permanent ceasefire be arranged, myriad problems will need attention. Those include international supervision of the ceasefire, agreement on how to handle violations, the locations of a ceasefire along the Russian-Ukraine border, permissible troop and weapons deployments, and post-ceasefire arrangements for next steps. Agreement on these matters will be difficult to reach. Trump's approach to resolving the Ukraine war may have an additional twist that benefits Russia. Recent comments by Trump and Secretary of State Marco Rubio suggest that the U.S. wants to strengthen Russia so as to wean it away from China. It's a reversal of the Nixon strategy in the 1970s, when, as part of Henry Kissinger's strategic triangle idea, U.S. policy was to engage with China in order to weaken the Soviet Union. Rubio reportedly said the other day, "I don't know if we'll ever be successful completely at peeling them, the Russians, off of a relationship with the Chinese, but I do think we're in a situation now where the Russians have become increasingly dependent on the Chinese, and that's not a good outcome." If that is indeed the U.S. strategy, it further explains why Trump has asked nothing of Putin and everything of Ukraine. What better incentives for Putin to move away from China than delivering Ukraine and Russia to him? Thus does Trump become an easy mark for Putin, his best hope for ensuring that Russia will have predominant influence in Europe, not mainly through military moves, though the threat is there, but in political influence over far-right parties. Yet the strategy has numerous holes in it. The Russia-China strategic partnership is tighter than ever. Playing the Russia card could easily backfire. Russia gains in Europe without shedding its close ties with Beijing, leaving Trump with nothing to show for having sacrificed an independent country to a very ambitious dictator. I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, March 25th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes myself, Josh Salem, Mel Gertow, and Emma Lugo. Their producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Edwin J. Vieira, Antonia Gonzalez, Suzanne Potter, Isabel Charlet, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available at our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.